session number 23821, reel 8.
Mr. Halliday, reel 8. Now, you got back to Chatham Barracks. It just entered into June, I would imagine, after two weeks, you know. Or on the borders between
June. Yeah, June. Yes, this would be June.
And
the end of May, I think.
Okay, and you got back to Chatham.
Mm-hmm. And there I spent a couple of weeks on a soft number in the post office. Then add a draft to what was called Orford Ness, which was the Far East.
Which was what, sorry?
The Far East. The draft was to the Far East, but it was called Orford Ness. Don't ask me how to spell it, but that was... Then I moved from there to Corsham in Wiltshire, which was an overflow camp, because, as I said earlier, Chatham Barracks was absolutely chock-a-block with people. And this was a strange experience down here, really, because we was the first... I came down here the first lot, and there was no... fences, no barriers. You came and went as you pleased.
And this is at where, sir?
Corsham in Wiltshire.
Corsham.
HMS, which subsequently was subsequently called HMS Arthur, Royal Arthur. It subsequently became known as HMS Royal Arthur.
And it's in Wiltshire.
Yeah. And it was there that I met the future wife. Well, during that period that I met the future wife. In the end of June, the draft had been changed because apparently we're no longer wanted out in the Far East. And the draft then was to Eurockledon, and that was in Malta. I went out to Malta on a large liner. I can't think of the name of him now.
This would be July.
Yeah. And when I got to Malta, two days in the barracks, and then I got a draft to HMS Cuckmere at Taranto. And I can remember travelling from Malta to Taranto on the Italian cruiser, the Pompeo Magno. I'll never forget that name. When I got to Trieste, the Cuckmere was in dry...
Trieste or Taranto.
Taranto. When I got to Taranto, the Cuckmere was in dry dock, having been damaged. And we were C&M party, care and maintenance.
What type of ship was it? What state was it in?
It was in a... It had been in dry dock quite some while, and was a bit of a wreck.
What was it, a destroyer or...?
No, it was a corvette. Nothing had been done on it for months. It was in a real state of disrepair.
So you were joining the care and maintenance party, were you?
Well, became part of the crew, which is what you call a care and maintenance party. You're supposed to just look after it and maintain it, but this hadn't obviously happened. Nobody had looked after it before. It was in a hell of a state. But anyhow, most of the other crew were beat sailors, those who used to offload supplies at the invasion, sort of beaches. They wore khaki, in actual fact, but Royal Naval caps. And they obviously knew nothing about seamanship whatsoever. We fell in one morning about 10 o'clock. The routine, it was very slack, and there was the first lieutenant, Bibbington, and he asked if anybody had any experience of splicing, and I thought, well, there's a soft number coming up, and put my name forward, and henceforth I became known as the bosun, which gave me a cushy number, because all I was doing was splicing ropes. Just sodding about in general. Anyhow, eventually we were towed to Malta.
What was that like? Was it an eventful journey? Or
no, it was quite uneventful, but what was... I can remember really that when we... Time had passed a bit because we spent Christmas Day... We had arrived in Malta, I think, 2 days before Christmas. And we were anchored in Salima.
So you've been there, you've been about 5 months, because July to...
Well, yeah, it, as I say, definitely Christmas I spent up there. And anyhow... of course, we'd come from Italy, and it had been pretty easy, slack, and enjoyed ourselves. And the point was, of course, that we were skint. And Christmas. And it was the worst Christmas I've ever spent. Not a drink. And as far as the skipper was concerned, he was a right bee. I didn't even have the decency to wish us a Merry Christmas. I was also at the job of being coxswain of the motorboat. And I recall on one occasion that I was told the boat was required to take the captain round. So this time we'd moved it, that's right, this time we'd moved back into Grand Harbour at Valletta. And but I was told then we had to take the boat round, the skipper round in the boat to Singalia, where he, in actual fact, was going to get some money to pay the crew. It's pretty rough weather. And I said to the first lieutenant, when he told me that I was going to be required, and I said, it's pretty rough out there, you know. So he says, well, he said, sorry, he said, but that's the captain's orders. All right, fair enough. Now, I'm not sure on this whether I actually, seeing that I was going to be the coxswain of the boat, whether I really had a right to refuse. I just don't know what the legal situation was, but at that point in time, that sort of thing never crossed your mind, but all right, so there was a crew of three of us. I was the coxswain, and there was the bellman, and a chap called Arthur Ratt, he was the engineer, looked after the motor. Now, when you come into Grand Harbour at Valletta, there is the big breakwater, and a large area where the big ships can come in, but towards the end of the breakwater there is a small gap with a gantry bridge over the top, and I suppose that gap must be somewhere around about 4 yards, and the best thing to do is to go through there. Of course we did. But the point is, though, it was blowing outside and there was a fair old swell. And the boat nearly went over. But anyhow, we got through and it was okay once we got past it. Took him round to the skipper, round the Salima. Of course, he was not too happy about what had happened. And when he left us, he said, right, he said, I'll make my own way back. He said, you can return to the ship. And I thought, well, thank you very much, sir. Because by this time it was blowing a bit. But anyhow, on the return journey, I decided that we would not do the shortcut, but go out and cover him through the main entrance. And there was a bit of a rollicking afterwards as to we were spotted by the, I don't know what you call it, the flag office. And questions were asked, what the hell was that boat doing out there in that kind of weather? Well, that was the... But anyhow, then, in actual fact, I was then taken off there and I was drafted to the Ajax.
Now, what were you still an ordinary seaman at this
No, time? I'm able seaman.
When did you become able seaman? I should have asked
you. Oh, I'd been able seaman all way back on the good old.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I say, the gunnery rating accelerated the promotion to able seaman. And anyhow, I, as I say, was then drafted to the Ajax, the cruiser. And that was, of course...
When would that be? January or
in 40? Yeah, I would think it'd be somewhere around about that time.
And what did you think of the Ajax? It's the biggest ship you've been on.
Oh, yeah, it was totally different. Totally different. And, of course, the point is so that the we had moved into a peacetime setting. It was had the Marines on board, the Marine band, and all the other trimmings. When we was in Malta, they would... But even they would put the canopy over the canvas canopy over the quarter deck and invite the local bigwigs to a gin and what have you. Of course, mind you, the point is that anybody below the rank of an officer was not allowed on the quarter deck unless he was a functionary, like the waiter or something like that. But it was out of bounds as far as the lower deck was concerned.
What were your mess decks like? How did they compare in a big ship like that?
They were much bigger. The only point is, of course, that then we came back to hammocks. So I had been re-kitted with a new hammock and that, and it was quite different, to be quite frank. There was much more space. There wasn't the comradeship. A camaraderie that one experienced on a smaller ship. In fact, on the mess I was on, there was a bit of hostility at times between some of us. We didn't really get on well together.
What were the sort of problems?
No, it was just one of those things that you can't put your finger on the spot.
What did they do to irritate you, if you see what I mean? How did they treat you?
Now, I think with some of them, the old point is, of course, that because I'd been wounded and we'd been issued without medal ribbons and that, and of course I also had the bars on the sleeve, which you can wear if you've been wounded, like, you know, in action. And when I got on board there, obviously what questions were asked, like, you know, and I don't know whether in actual fact that there was some resentment over the fact that I'd been where I'd been and done what I'd done. These sort of things do happen, you know. I mean, some of them were all right in that they were... they had shorter service than what I had, like, they'd been drafted out there, but those that had been in a bit longer, maybe as long as me or a bit longer, there seemed to be a bit of a distance, and I must confess, I suppose I might have swung the lead a little bit. Not that I can recall it, but I'm looking for possible reasons. But having said that, it was quite good. In fact, that was beyond the ADEX.
Picture of you. Yeah. What about the petty officers, the leading seamen, and the officers? How did you get on with them? Or was there trouble with them as well?
No, they were all right. The only point is, we had the officer I had. And in fact, it's strange, I'm sure that his name was Featherstone Dilk, hyphenated. And in actual fact, I read about him in the Captain Class Frigates, that he was actually, a Featherstone Dilk was on a Captain Class Frigate. Now, I shouldn't have think there was too many people about with that name. But he was my divisional officer.
What was he like?
He was all right. He was an officer. He spoke with a plum in his mouth, and the old point was, though, that upstairs was upstairs and downstairs was downstairs, and that was it really on a cruiser.
And that was the same with all the officers, then?
Yeah.
They were less friendly than they'd been?
Yeah, I mean, the point is...
Well, less approachable, perhaps.
No, but you did most of your contacting through the petty officers and leading hands. But there was one instance that I recall. Featherstone Dilt was, as I say, tough, you know, he's a sarcastic bugger. We, on one occasion, was playing water polo alongside the ship. And it was serious. The various teams had been knocked up, and I found myself, in actual fact, playing in a team, and Featherstone Dilk was in the other team. And on two occasions, he came and fouled me, bumped with his elbow, and I thought, right, you bugger. Well, anyhow, the point is, as I said earlier, I could swim like a fish. And the ball came to me, and he came towards me, so I just threw it over his head and went round. Of course, he turned. And then I went to throw it again, and he turned. But this time, in actual fact, I grabbed hold of him, pushed him under, and locked his body between my legs. I scored a wonderful goal. It wasn't allowed because there was Bandy was there. That was the bandmaster, the Royal Marines. He was the referee, and he'd blow his whistle all the time, like, you know. And suddenly, you know, I let go of Featherstone Dilk, but he came to the surface, and he had fair air, and the air had fallen down over his eyes. And as he broke surface, I can hear it now. He was, foul, foul, foul. And, right, you bastard. Be naughty with me again. But afterwards, the funny point is, though, that, I don't know, it was my imagination, but I seemed to get on better with him. Maybe he thought we might have another polo match. But now, with regards to instance,
First, what were your duties? I mean, were you on the Oerlikon?
Yeah, I was on the Oerlikon. In actual fact, by this time, and on there was twin Oerlikons. And this was quite different, really, because you sat in a sort of a chariot. And, you know, you moved the air, so it was electronically, like, you know, it was a wonderful toy, to be quite honest. The only point, of course, I never ever fired, had an opportunity of firing it in anger or anything like that. But it was that, and, but...
that was your action station.
It would have been. of course, the point is, though, that nobody even thought about such things as that, although we did get to a situation later on.
Let's go on to the instance. So what do you remember happening on the... You're in the Mediterranean.
Well, we went on the usual trips. We went to Trieste. We went to Venice. We went to Port Said. We went to Greece. Patras, Piraeus. I remember going to Athens and having a few jars there. In fact, a general cruise round the Mediterranean, Haifa. But we did have one or two sort of, what I suppose would be called incidents. The Albanians decided that they were going to arbitrarily extend their territorial waters. And this particular area was a sort of a strait in which we used to use quite a bit. And we said, well, you can't do that. And their answer to that was to mine it. And two of our destroyers actually were hit by mines. They didn't sink. One had a bows blown off. The other one was hit in the stern. They were V-class destroyers. And subsequently, I understand that they made one ship out, the two of them. But anyhow, the point is, though, that obviously there had been the diplomatic notes and all that political side. And then we were told that we had to go up there and clear these mines. And they said that if we went up there, they would open fire. In those days, Rule Britannia still ruled the waves, so we decided to go up there with half the Mediterranean fleet. Two aircraft carriers, three cruisers, umpteen destroyers, and an old flotilla of minesweepers. Needless to say, when we got there, we didn't get any trouble at all from the Albanians, and it was a case of the minesweepers doing their job. And here again, I was called on a boat. I wasn't the coxswain. No, that would be a petty officer on board the... or a leading hand at least, was to go away in actual fact and tow the cut mines. Where did we tow them? I don't know. All we had to do was to tow the bloody things. I can't remember in actual fact. But yeah, I only remember one trip on that.
You were towing them, the motorboat was towing them?
Yeah, well, the boat that we was in, was all you had to do was to put a rope over it and pull the bloody thing along. Like, you know, wherever, I'm not sure what the hazard was there, whether or not, I can't recall, actually, as to where in actual fact we attached the towing rope. Well, anyhow, we did. But I needed one trip on that like that. But that was soon all over. The next one, of course, was in between time. We were obviously going off on all these fancy trips. It was more like a Mediterranean cruise than anything else, to be quite honest. A lot nowadays, people pay a hell of a lot of money for that. Then, arising from the Palestine plebiscite, this was the establishment of the State of Israel, which, of course, had been a British protectorate for quite some years. The incoming government, Israeli government, were not, and of course, there was still also a British presence as far as administration was concerned, but it was not in a position to take the hundreds of thousands of Jews, European Jews, that wanted to flood into the Promised Land. And our function was to stop these boats, intercept them, to board them, and then tow them into Cyprus or Crete, where there was a holding camp in which they were held for a period, but then after about 9 months they were subsequently allowed in an orderly fashion to go into Israel. But that was interesting in that I recall we went to this, I don't know what you would call it, a catch or something like that, but I don't suppose it should have been carrying no more than about 20, 30 people. It must have had nearly 200 or 300 on there. Smelt absolutely terrible. And the point was that we had to go along and board it to put a tow rope on. That was pretty dicey, because as we got clear and close to them, and they knew what we were doing, they were pelting us with tins of canned fruit. And I can assure you that a can of apples or pears, whatever it was flying around your ears, I mean, was not very appreciated at the time. But anyhow, the point is, though, that we did get on there, and I wasn't one, in actual fact, that climbed on there. It was one of the two of the other lads. There was a few bruises, shall we say, because they had armed us with Sten guns, no bullets. And also these trenching tools, these stars. And the two lads that climbed on, they were pretty adept at swinging these around left, right and centre. Well, they needed to, because they weren't welcome. But anyhow, the point is so that... so we had that. So it was a bit of variety.
Did you have any sympathy for them, the Jewish people, or...?
I don't think, really, that you had any faults one way or another. Certainly we didn't have any hostility towards them. As I say, it was just the fact that, all right, we've got a job to do, and when you're in a service like that, I mean, you obey the orders. Now, I know, and of course, that there have been some circumstances where people have said that many atrocities have been, as a result of people paying... just obeying orders, but at least we didn't come into that category. Maybe if we were confronted with something like that, then one might have had some second thoughts. But then, in actual fact, I was in Port Said when the mob came up.
Now, when was that? Do you remember what year?
Oh, this was 47.
So you were on the...
Ajax about 17 months or something like that. Something like that, 17, 18 months. Me demob number... we were in Port Said when me demob number came up. And I left the ship and had transit back to Portsmouth on a fleet tanker. Really, that was more or less the end of my service career.